This is Jesse Zurawell and Perspective on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to Perspective. I am Jesse Zurawell, your host for the hour. And I do have a guest booked for today, but he is running a bit behind. Hopefully he will join the program around quarter after. So until then, I'm going to go through some news stories that are almost certainly not making the headlines in corporate media, absolutely not in Western corporate media. And if they are, you can be sure that they're being skewed to fit Western narratives. So the first development I want to hit on is a piece that RT published yesterday titled "Amount of U.S. Weaponry Delivered to Ukraine Revealed." And the subheader of this piece, which jives with what we just heard in the news updates before I came on here, is that the U.S. has delivered 80% of the howitzers it promised Kiev. And this is according to Washington. 80% of the M777 howitzers and half of the 155 millimeter ammunition for them, which were promised to Ukraine by President Joe Biden last month, have already been delivered. And this is according to the Department of Defense on in a statement on Monday. In addition to that, the U.S. military said it has supplied nearly all the counter-battery and anti-aircraft radars and 5,000 Javelin anti-tank missiles pledged, but no helicopters just yet. So you're starting to get an idea here of just how much weaponry solely from the U.S. is being pumped into Ukraine, but it gets worse. So these figures that I'm citing come from a background briefing that was given at the Pentagon on Monday by an unnamed American defense official to reporters. And this is supposedly the official account of Washington's military aid to Kiev. So Biden initially promised Ukraine 18 howitzers, but later added another 72, along with 140,000 rounds of 155 millimeter ammunition, 10 counter artillery radars, 2 air surveillance radars, 200 M113 armored personnel carriers, 100 Humvees, and 11 Mi-17 helicopters. So this is an extraordinary amount of weaponry that the U.S. by itself is pumping into Ukraine. And we have to remember that in addition to this, there are other Western Empire states like Germany, Poland, and many others who are pumping weaponry into Ukraine. And at the same time, making no moves whatsoever toward a negotiated settlement with Russia, making no moves to meet Russia halfway with its requests that Ukraine be neutralized, that Ukraine not join NATO, that NATO continue not continue to expand eastward, that the Minsk Accords or Minsk Agreements, Minsk Agreement, I should say, that the terms of those be met by Ukraine. And these were terms that were drawn up in late 2014 with help from France and Germany, who are both now supplying weaponry to Ukraine. And over the past 8 years, these countries did nothing whatsoever to make sure that Ukraine fulfilled its side of the Minsk deal. Instead, they let Ukraine be overrun with Nazi entities like Azov, like Pravi Sektor, like C-14, Tornado Battalion. The list goes on and on with these Nazi entities. And at the same time, these entities have permeated not just the military and government, but also the police force, most notoriously the SBU, which is Ukraine's secret police force. And this used to be a police force that was, it did have some good people working in it. This according to George Eliason, who is based in Donbass. And I spoke to him last week about that, but it's long since been purged of those good individuals and is now overrun literally with psychopaths, a lot of whom subscribe to Nazi ideology and quite openly. And this is a good segue to introduce my guest who is connected, because this is something we're going to be talking about in some detail. And here with me today, I'm happy to say, is Max Blumenthal. He is the editor-in-chief of The Gray Zone, an independent media outlet, which you can find at thegrayzone.com. He's the author of several books, including most recently, The Management of Savagery, which I highly recommend to everyone who's listening. I like to say that it's required reading if you want to get a good idea, a really, really good idea of U.S. foreign policy and deep state involvement in that, and how the tentacles of that have really spread around the world and have done so for decades upon decades. Max is also the producer of several documentaries, including Killing Gaza, which I also highly recommend watching. And he recently co-authored a piece at The Gray Zone titled "One Less Traitor: Zelensky Oversees Campaign of Assassination, Kidnapping, and Torture of Political Opposition," which is going to inform our conversation today. So without further ado, Max, welcome to Perspective, and thank you very much for joining me today.
Sorry, I had to push a button, and now we're here. So thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no problem. So I want to get into this piece you wrote, and I don't want to go necessarily through the piece, you know, bit by bit, but I want to focus our discussion on what you and Isha Krishnaswamy, who co-authored this piece with you, what you detail in here, because it's very important for people to understand, as we hear over and over, that Ukraine is an innocent, victimized democracy trying to defend itself and its territorial integrity. It's really important to know internally what's been happening in that country, especially at the hands of the SBU and the orders that Zelensky has been giving this secret police force, essentially, to the orders he's been giving them to carry out against dissidents of all kind, whether they're political dissidents, whether they're activists, journalists. So when it came to you to put this piece together, I mean, what was the impetus? When did you start to realize that something was really wrong with what's been happening internally with regard to dissidents in Ukraine?
Well, I've been covering this issue since 2014, and really since the neo-Nazi C-14 captured City Hall in Kiev during the whole Maidan coup, the Maidan putsch. And they then fled to the Canadian embassy, who gave them safe shelter. But there was video of just swastikas, Nazi flags, Confederate flags, SS symbols, Wolf's Angel symbols being emblazoned on the walls of and draped on the walls of the City Hall in Kiev. And it was obvious that there were neo-Nazis at the forefront. And then we saw what happened in Odessa with the torching of the trade union hall containing hundreds of ethnic Russians who had protested. I mean, Odessa had a large population of ethnic Russians who protested the Maidan coup. and they were slaughtered by ultra-nationalists, including C-14, and the Ukrainian SBU is behind that. The intelligence services were behind that. They enacted a purge starting in 2014. You know, all the people in, so many people in Kharkov, local officials, they were purged to Ukrainianize that city. Cities on the Ukrainian side of the Donbass saw purges down to the classroom level, where teachers were not able to teach in Russian. I mean, at every level, the SBU presided over a campaign of terror against people who are seen as insufficiently submissive to the nationalist Ukrainization and decommunization campaign of Kiev. You had this legislator, Hanna Hopko. She's a member of parliament who was backed by the West, was seen as a really like a rising star, and she got to go on all these delegations to Washington. She was hosted at an event at the Ukrainian embassy with Hillary Clinton's, one of her top foreign policy advisors, Milan Verveer, around the time that the Ukrainian embassy began interfering in the 2016 election. And Hanna Hopko was the author of all of these decommunization bills, which aim to tear down statues, not just of Lenin, or Soviet leaders, but of Soviet partisans who fought against the Nazis, which included the Banderite factions in World War II, the Ukrainian Nazi collaborators. Decommunization also meted out 5-year penalties for people who were supporters of communism, who spoke out against the official curriculum. Speech was criminalized from the beginning after the Maidan coup. And this was, so this was all about, and the US was behind it. So when Zelensky last year banned 3 TV stations of his top rival, Viktor Medvedchuk, it would be like if Joe Biden banned, I mean, you know, everyone's upset, worried about censorship right now in the US and disinformation being defined by the Biden administration's Department of Homeland Security. But imagine if Biden just came out and just banned Fox News. And then the Chinese government and the Russian government, I mean, it wouldn't have them, cheered it on through their embassy in Washington. That's what happened in Ukraine. Viktor Medvedchuk, Zelensky's top rival, banned 3 TV stations belonging to Medvedchuk on the grounds of you know, national security and fighting Russian meddling. And the State Department came out in an official statement endorsing what he did. So we can safely assume that the State Department is not only supportive of Zelensky banning 13 political parties this year, including all parties left on the left side of the political spectrum in Ukraine, but that they were actually egging him on to do it, that they designed this policy, as well as training through the CIA, the Ukrainian SBU, which has been on an extermination spree through its death squads across Ukraine against anyone who questions the war effort. I mean, the war has basically been a cover for the Ukrainian SBU and the entire apparatus that Zelensky presides over, which actually kind of presides over him, for purging all political opposition and creating an authoritarian kind of Pinochet-style neoliberal nationalist state run by proxy from Washington.
Yeah, it's, when you read through the piece that you co-authored, it's horrifying to see the amount, just that you were able to document in the piece, the amount of atrocities that have been carried out by the SBU. And as you say in the piece, the list of victims and crimes is far too long to be contained in the piece, but there are some really stark examples, some stark pictures and footage that you provide. And it's important to point out that this, you know, not only does this go against what we're being told in Western narratives, but it's ramping up. So recently we had Vitaly Kim, who's the governor of the Nikolaev Oblast. He came out on, I think it's the only news channel that's left in Ukraine after a consolidation that was undertaken by Zelensky's regime. And I don't know if you saw this, but he came out in an interview and openly admitted that the SBU has embarked on this extermination campaign of dissidents. And he mentioned a blogger who had recently been shot to death in his car. I saw the footage, not of him being shot, but the aftermath. He had been ambushed from both sides, shot through the windows, and he was in his car slumped over. So, I mean, this is being openly expressed and even celebrated. The host he was speaking to on the show, she was like smiling and snickering along to it. So it's unbelievable that this is taking place. And you can find this footage very easily, but none of it, of course, is showing up in Western corporate media.
Yeah, I mean, the examples that we provided in this piece are just they account for a small proportion of what's been taking place across Ukraine, which is the kidnapping, arresting, disappearing, and often the torturing and even the assassination of people who simply post messages on Facebook critical of the government, or who say that they feel like people in, for example, Kharkov, which has a large number of ethnic Russians, if they go on Facebook and say, you know, we are under occupation by these Nazi forces, they will be picked up by the Ukrainian SBU. Mm-hmm. The Associated Press has even shown video, kind of like making the SBU look not exactly like death squads, but like sort of reasonable people defending their country during wartime. But they've shown it. And this is happening all across Ukraine. But what's remarkable is just how overt it is and how gruesome mm-hmm. some of these attacks have been on leftists just for being leftists. Assassinations of mayors. Vladimir Strup, for example, was murdered. He's the mayor of a city called Kremina, which is on the Ukrainian side of Lugansk. So they just went, he tried to negotiate with Russia. He represented his constituents who were ethnic Russians and said, like, let's just get this thing over with and stop this war and organize a humanitarian corridor and whatever he said was obviously too much for the Ukrainian SBU. He was kidnapped, shot in the heart, thrown in a ditch. And the advisor to the Ministry of the Interior Ministry, Anton Garoshenko, a guy who's tweeting in English on Twitter, like Western journalists retweet him. He went on his Telegram channel in Ukrainian and said, there's one less traitor in Ukraine, and posted the image of him shot. He basically said, you know, took credit for it. Assassination of a mayor.
Right.
You got Yuri Prilipko.
I just want to point out real quick that Garoshenko is the inventor, if you will, of the Mirov-Verets, which is the enemies of the state. It's the enemies of the state public blacklist that this Ministry of Internal Affairs advisor created. I think he created it back in 2015 or 2016, if I'm not mistaken. So it's been around for quite some time. And most recently, the president of Croatia was added to that list because he opposes, what Ukraine has been turned into, essentially, and the way that NATO has weaponized Ukraine against Russia. So I just bring that in to add.
Yeah, that blacklist is a major. The blacklist is a major part of the campaign of death squad terror that has been witnessed under the Maidan post-coup regime, the U.S.-run regime in Ukraine. And this is about particularly cracking down on media. Oles Buzina was a prominent columnist who was accused of being harboring pro-Russian sympathies. Death squads composed of neo-Nazi militants backed by the Ukrainian SBU murdered Buzina in broad daylight. They posted video or pictures of it. They boasted about it, and the killers are free. They're walking free, along with the Tornado Brigade torturers and murderers. some of whom were actually jailed under Poroshenko because what they did was too extreme. This was an SBU-backed neo-Nazi faction that was actually caught raping, literally videotaping themselves raping babies. I mean, it sounds like ridiculous that I'm saying it. Like people might not believe it, but it's real. Yeah. Many of their leaders were let out of prison by Zelensky at the beginning of the war.
Right.
And this was obviously an SBU project. It's like, we're going to need the hard men. Let's let them all out. So yeah, Gerashenko is taking credit for this campaign. This whole campaign took place under the watch of the Interior Ministry, which is also the main patron of the neo-Nazi battalions like the Azov Battalion, Idar Battalion, and so on. But other mayors have been killed. Yuri Prilipko was killed. He's a mayor of another eastern city. Oleg Novikov, a disabled rights activist, was taken away by the SBU in Kharkov. Journalists like Yuri Chakev disappeared. You have Jan Taksur, a pretty well-known broadcast journalist, was taken away by the SBU. Human rights activist Elena Vyacheslava, whose father, Mikhail, was actually burned to death by these neo-Nazis in Odessa exactly 8 years ago yesterday at the Odessa Trade Union Hall, taken away, disappeared. We don't know where these people are. Mikhail and Alexander Kononovich, these are communist activists in Kiev, disappeared for being communists. Alexander Matsuchenko in the city of Dnipro, captured by Azov neo-Nazis, tortured on camera. We published photos of the torture in our piece at the Gray Zone. It's disgusting. You know, he's being beaten with a gun, like a literal gun barrel to his head. There's blood all over his face. His partner had her head shaved, and while she was being tortured, then he was taken away, held without bond, and he's been sentenced to 3 years in prison for he was accused of conducting an aggressive war, or like interfering.
Right.
I mean, no, he faces 15 years in prison, actually. Sorry, I got that wrong. So, I mean, the point is, I can go on and on and on. These are cases that you would think Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International would be highlighting, howling about. It would be all over the New York Times, but it's just been swept under the rug. It's completely ignored. And people here in Washington, the liberals, I was just walking through Georgetown in Washington, D.C. 2 days ago. There are Zelensky quotes painted on the windows of restaurants there next to, you know, another CIA asset, the Dalai Lama. And then, you know, you'll have your Nelson Mandela quote. So Zelensky's seen as this great heroic peacemaker here, and there are Ukrainian flags everywhere. What Zelensky really is, and we I think demonstrated this pretty well in an interview we published with a Ukrainian academic who studied Zelensky and published academic work about his rise. Her name is Olga Baisha. We published it at the Gray Zone. It's an interview conducted by Natalie Baldwin. But I think the portrait she paints of Zelensky is of kind of a modern Pinochet. He's sort of like a cross between Charlie Chaplin's Great Dictator, but unironically, and Pinochet. And what he's done is basically put neoliberalism on steroids after campaigning against corruption, invested enormous brute force and reinforced the monopoly on violence that's been enjoyed by the neo-Nazis that he claimed to oppose, and assassinated, disappeared, silenced, and arrested his political rivals. It's very much like Pinochet.
Yes, yes, very much. And I think, to my mind, Zelensky is, I mean, now he's fully on board with this extermination program, this pogrom program that he has going on with the SBU. But he's also, it seems to me to be, he seems to be an opportunist and very, very moldable, very pliable. So that he will bend whichever way the wind is blowing, as long as it's in his favor. You know, I think it's important to note, as Alex Rubinstein pointed out in a piece he wrote for the Gray Zone, that Igor Kolomoisky, this Ukrainian oligarch, who also has citizenship in Israel and Cyprus, as well as Ukraine, is largely responsible for, he financed Zelensky's presidential campaign. He owned the channel that Zelensky's television show was on. The name of the political party in the show became the name of Zelensky's actual political party. But it seems that Kolomoisky, who also heavily financed Azov and the Dnipro battalions, Nazi battalions, he molded this figure of Zelensky. And of course, Zelensky came in on a peace program, but almost immediately, you know, when he went to the front lines in Zolota to talk to Azov, they laughed him down. This is something that Alex covered in his piece as well. And supposedly, Dmytro Yarosh said that if Zelensky negotiated to implement Minsk II, that, quote, he will hang on some tree on Kreshchatyk, which is Kreshchatyk, which is one of Kiev's main streets. And so very quickly, Zelensky understood which way the wind was blowing, and he got into bed with these Nazis, and he's fully a bedfellow with them now. So and he's really just going for it. But I don't think that he even calls the shots. I think that Aristovich, who is his top advisor, is much more involved in that. And then above and beyond that, it's hard to tell. But I want to just bring up Dmytro Yarosh again, because when I was talking to George Eliason, who's a journalist based in Donbass and has been based there for the past 8 years, he said that when it comes to the SBU, the guy who's calling the shots is Yarosh and Trizub Nazi entity. So he brought that up because he said it's important to give to put names to the SBU, because, you know, we say the SBU, it's like saying the CIA. Well, who's really responsible here? Who's calling the shots? So Yarosh is somebody we should pay attention to, as probably ordering a lot of these abductions and murders.
Well, they also have Alexander Poklad, who Zelensky appointed to lead the counterintelligence division of the SBU. Mm-hmm. And I mean, presumably Yarosh, who is already advising the police department in Kiev, which is a direct channel to the SBU, made this pick. I don't know as much as George Eliason, but we wrote about this, how Poklad is nicknamed the Strangler because of the tactics that he had used on behalf of his patrons, his bosses, to set up their political rivals on treason charges. And like, they would get them to admit to things they didn't do, or he would use dirty tricks to fabricate material. And then he'd, you know, produce the material, and there'd be an investigation, and then the rivals would be arrested. It was just like eliminating political opposition through more sophisticated means. He obviously was seen as important enough and crafty enough to lead the counterintelligence division going forward from 2021. And he's a key figure now in the disappearances and assassinations. Dan Cohen actually wrote about him in connection with the targeting of a very popular Ukrainian kind of libertarian blogger named Anatoly Shari, who has been living in exile and was targeted with an assassination plot this March during the war, where his friend, a former advisor and businessman who was a supporter of his, was actually captured and apparently tortured. And he was used into trying to bait Shari into the open so that the SBU could capture him abroad. because they considered him to be a big threat. I mean, he's a huge critic of Zelensky and the whole Kiev regime.
And he has his own political party, right? The Party of Sharia.
Yeah, which was just banned.
Right, exactly. So another point I want to, well, something I want to reiterate that your piece homes in on and that you've emphasized during our conversation here is specifically the targeting of leftists. And when we talk about leftists in the States, it's hard to know what that means anymore because the left has been so diluted here that it basically means whatever anybody wants it to mean when they say left. But, you know, you and I think we have, and a lot of other people as well, we have a good idea of what it means to be a leftist. And these individuals, these journalists, these activists in Ukraine, whether they're with affiliated with the Communist Party or other leftist entities, so do they. They haven't forgotten what leftist activism and politics are all about. And so, you know, this really is a purge of actual leftists who have actual leftist values and visions in mind. And we're not talking about, you know, like the laptop left that we have here in the US.
Well, it's a purge of people who are against NATO. And the purges, they take place consistently throughout Europe. They're taking place in Macedonia. I mean, they've been taking place in Bulgaria. They're taking place all across Eastern and Central Europe, Poland. And so it's not just leftists. And many of those who have anti-NATO positions who might identify as socialist or might also be illiberal in Ukraine and have strong religious convictions and attachment to the Orthodox Church, for example. That helps understand the government and its constituency in the Donetsk Republic in the Donbass. That's something that might be unrelatable to leftists in the US who are extremely, maybe they define their leftism as being extremely very liberal. So, in any case, you have parties that are not left wing that have been banned because they're Eurosceptic or anti-NATO. The Party of Sharia would be one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not just leftists who are being targeted, but I just wanted to emphasize that the leftists who are being targeted, there's a very big difference between left movements in Ukraine and much of Eastern Europe when compared with what are supposedly leftist movements in the US, where, as I said, being of the left has largely been diluted. Although I think there are still a lot of people who haven't fallen into that dilution and are still doing very good work. So we have to throw it to a quick break, but I do want to pick up on this when we come back and touch on a few other things before the hour is up. So more with Max Blumenthal after this.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
Some midterm election candidates are raising eyebrows in the legacy media. These are the ones accused of promoting conspiracy theories, such as a stolen 2020 presidential election. Two such notable candidates are Christina Caramo, who on the 23rd of April was selected for the Republican Party's endorsement for Michigan's Secretary of State, and Matt DiPerno, who won the Republican Party's endorsement for Michigan Attorney General. While attacked by the legacy media, they clearly have strong local support. DiPerno calls to end unconstitutional mandates of masks and forced vaccinations, to defend free speech, and, shock horror, freedom in general. These candidates are no doubt infuriating the hierarchy at the Department of Homeland Security, which has just established the Disinformation Governance Board, more aptly named as an Orwellian Ministry of Truth. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
You have the right to know. The right to know about culture. The right to know about the economy. The right to know about technology and to know about sports. You have the right to know about education and politics and the weather. You have the right to know what's happening abroad and in your backyard. But above all else, you have the right to know that this right is under attack, and we must work to protect it. Because in order to be free, we must be informed. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
Hey everyone, TNT presenter Misty Winston here. As you may already know, journalist and publisher Julian Assange is facing extradition and 175 years in prison for doing what journalists all over the world do every day. This case represents the most dangerous threat to press freedom in history. The case now sits in the hands of UK Home Secretary Priti Patel. Please contact her office and encourage her to do the right thing and refuse the extradition request. This case will forever change the future of press freedom. We can't afford to lose.
In 2018, 2.9 million people died of the flu and pneumonia. In 2020, there was a 98% decline in influenza. But 2.8 million die of COVID? Data never lies. We mandate that the truth be told. TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Perspective. I am Jesse Zerwell, your host for the rest of the hour. And I've been speaking with independent journalist and senior editor of thegrayzone.com, Max Blumenthal. And we've been speaking, using as an outline, so to speak, a piece that he recently co-authored at thegrayzone.com entitled One Less Traitor, Zelensky Oversees Campaign of Assassination, Kidnapping, and Torture of Political Opposition. And as I said earlier, it's essentially a compendium, by no means complete, but very rounded out, of a torture and murder campaign that Zelensky has been overseeing, carried out by Ukraine's SBU. As Max said, this started in 2014, when, of course, Zelensky wasn't in power. And this is something that has been going on constantly since then. And before February 24th of this year, Human Rights Watch, the OSCE, the UN, were happy to document the crimes of torture and murder and disappearance that were being carried out by what I call Nazi elements. Some people call them neo-Nazis, but in any event, they have Nazi affiliations. And now these same organizations, as you said, Max, they're not calling out anything, though I would like to bring attention to a report that was recently published by Maxim Grigoriev, who's been doing really excellent work documenting Ukrainian war crimes and crimes against humanity carried out by these Nazi entities, as well as the armed forces of Ukraine. You can find this at, if you go to democracyfund.ru, you should be able to find it there. It's a over 400-page report entitled Ukrainian War Crimes and Human Rights Violations 2017 to 2020. I'm only part of the way through it, but it is a comprehensive documentation of the crimes that Max and I have been talking about. So there are people out there who are not just keeping an eye on it, but keeping a record of it, so that hopefully the perpetrators of this insanity will be held to account. But Max, one of the things I wanted to bring up is that, you know, you mentioned that AP piece, sort of whitewashing what's been happening. There's also a Deutsche Welle video that was put out following the SBU around on its raids and its roundups. There's one point in that video, I don't know if you've seen it, but the woman whose husband was tracked over social media and then arrested for posting quote unquote pro-Russian views, as they're taking him away, she hugs one of the SBU thugs and, you know, out of desperation and says, "Where are you taking him? Will he be protected?" And the guy coldly responds, "You know, he will be treated in accordance with the law." We forget, or we should mention, that Ukraine is under a state of martial law. And on top of that, there's been this total war propaganda campaign that's been unleashed. So can you speak to that? Because, you know, when there's martial law and you have prisoners released to supposedly defend Ukraine, I mean, anything goes.
Well, Zelensky is officially authorized this in his own comments. He's authorized this campaign of nationwide repression of and a open legal crackdown on anyone who criticizes the military effort, any citizen. That's not a matter of any dispute. Mm-hmm. Ukraine and it's essentially reinforcing the rules that have been in place and arbitrarily enforced since 2014, since Ukraine has been put in a state of permanent war by its Western patrons. Russia has been carrying out repression as well. There's no doubt about that. It's just Ukraine is portrayed as a democracy inside the US. And Zelensky said that he is fighting for not only all of European democracy, but for the whole world. I mean, mm-hmm. It's a farce. It is an absolute farce that this figure can claim to be a Democrat when this is taking place. Grigoryev's documentation is so extensive. I mean, I'll never have time to read it all. And it's just day after day in territory captured by Russian forces, he is able to document heinous war crimes carried out by the battalions in Mariupol, for example, that have been mm-hmm. You know, carried out over the years against the local population. This is how the Maidan regime has ruled east of the Dnipro River, where the further east you go, the less support there is for Kiev. And yeah, right. You mentioned the total war campaign, the propaganda campaign of the Ukrainian government is aiming to exploit its most powerful weapon, which is information warfare. Ukraine's propaganda apparatus is far more effective and well tuned than Russia's. I mean, Russia's, whatever, if you want to call it Russia's propaganda apparatus, its state-backed media outlets, RT and Sputnik, have been mostly muzzled inside the US. It's very difficult for American citizens to access them, but you're confronted with Ukrainian propaganda every day, everywhere. Michael Tracy has a piece out examining where these massive banner billboard campaigns from everywhere from London to Times Square, which are just branding Ukraine as Ukraine Brave and demanding more weapons for Ukraine, where they're coming from, who's paying for them, who's behind them. We don't even know. But
right.
It's everywhere, along with the fake stories about the ghost of Kiev, which the Ukrainian government finally admitted was fake, which we always knew, and the Snake Island. We heard about early on journalists like Brett Renault being killed, and we were told Russia was killing journalists. He was killed at a Ukrainian checkpoint because they were shooting everyone trying to get out of cities. We heard about the 300 killed in the Mariupol theater. Where are they? Why hasn't one person been documented? One death, one name. Give me one name. Show one body. Where is it?
Right.
I mean, I'm not saying that there aren't war crimes taking place or the killing of civilians. And then all of the videos, that just video after video showing interviews with people evacuating from Mariupol saying that they were fired on by Azov militants who were upset that they were losing them as collateral, or what's really taking place at Azovstal, the steel factory, where there are said to be civilians there, but we don't quite know who they are. And it appears that they have been held hostage were being used as human shields by literal neo-Nazi militants who are portrayed as defenders in Western media. So the Western media is collaborating very closely with this campaign of total war, and we're being blanketed with propaganda, which is extremely saturated with disinformation, as our government appoints a disinformation governance board to supposedly clamp down, and the person appointed to head it is a former advisor to this Ukrainian government and a massive disseminator of propaganda herself, Nina Jankowicz. So the main weapon that Ukraine has is right now the information weapon, and the goal of its total war campaign is to just throw away media ethics and the truth and use any means necessary to trigger Western intervention, because as with the Syrian armed opposition, it's the only thing that will prevent them from an inevitable defeat.
Right. Yeah, it's really all they have left anymore. And it was really all they had from the beginning. And, you know, we see the amount of weaponry that Western Empire is pumping into Ukraine. No moves whatsoever being made toward a negotiated peace. It's, you know, to my mind, it's as if the West wants to, since it knows it's not going to destabilize Russia and be able to balkanize Russia, it wants to destroy Ukraine at this point, and then open it up to new markets under the guise of rebuilding. You know, you and I were communicating about this last night about how Lesia Vasilenko, who's a Ukrainian PM and on the climate committee that they have, recently spoke to Politico EU about how Ukraine is going to be rebuilt with all green infrastructure. And, you know, this is the same woman who stole Patrick Lancaster's footage.
The woman
who was murdered in a school basement in Mariupol and had a swastika either smeared or burnt into her stomach after she was tortured and murdered. You know, Vasilenko put this out and said that Russians did this when it was clearly documented by
Yeah, and it got thousands of retweets, thousands of likes, and Twitter did nothing to crack down on it. I mean, it's just been lie after lie with no limitation, and the algorithm skewed in favor of the liars. Vasilenko also was the host or fixer for Christiane Amanpour of CNN when she parachuted into Kiev. The one liar welcoming another to promote the campaign to intervene.
Yeah, that's totally appropriate. So we have about 3 minutes left, but so I wanted to ask you in that time, I know that the Gray Zone, Mint Press, Consortium News, and other outlets have come under attack by PayPal recently. I actually, as an individual, was banned from PayPal. I don't know how that happened, but
really?
Not sure.
I mean, why you don't have any theories on why? I mean, I don't know why.
I mean,
I'm reading a Typeface piece right now. It's like I'm looking at it on my laptop, and I'm looking for the part where PayPal provides him with a comment, and I'm not finding it.
Whose piece is that?
Matt Taibbi has a piece up about it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, it's been across the board, and I got the same message that everybody else got about, you know, the risk that they perceive, and saying that, you know, it's not available to me. And then I know there was also something that Tucker Carlson covered with regard to the Gray Zone, and your response to it was spot on, and you know, you weren't going to concede to what they were demanding. So, you know, just in the last like minute and a half we have here, if there's anything you want to say on that, because, you know, this is an extension of the content purge that we're seeing happening in Ukraine.
Yeah. It's all coordinated. And then there was the Daily Beast attack demanding that all of us, you know, a number of anti-imperialists be kicked off of YouTube and kicked off of Patreon. There was, the NewsGuard request that I participate in their investigation of the Gray Zone and provide them with information on our transparency and so on, when they're funded by the Pentagon and the State Department and a big pharma PR firm that is being sued by the state of Massachusetts for illegally marketing Purdue Pharma opioids that have killed millions of Americans. So
yes,
I don't know if I can use rated R language on this show or what, but basically my message to them was just go fuck yourself. Like, that's all I'm going to say to these people. And that was my message to the Daily Beast and whoever, any of you. I'm not going to give you a quote or an interview or treat you like you're an actual journalist. You're just a snitch for the intelligence mm-hmm. agencies. That's all you are. And I'm going to assert my right to put a middle finger in your face. I mean, I would spit in your face, but you're going to just accuse me of assault. And then I'm going to have to go to jail again. Like when I was falsely accused of kicking some old Venezuelan right-wing Escualida woman outside the embassy. It was like that's the price that I paid for participating in an action to stop the U.S. government from taking over the Venezuelan embassy. Was I got a fake assault charge. I was jailed for 48 hours, and you know, we can see it continuing. What's scary is that we see that the Biden administration wants to formalize this process at the Department of Homeland Security. So it requires, in the last seconds we have, a cross-partisan or non-partisan movement against online political censorship of alternative media. And there is movement right now.
No, and we need to start building that quickly. Max, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your insights. And I look forward to speaking again soon.
Thanks a lot, Jesse.
Take care.